This episode of The Next Step is made possible through a grant from Harutyun Kelleja. A Christmas celebration and a Christmas message. Well, what else did you expect on today? Maybe the winter solstice. We'll talk about that too, as well as North Dakota and Standing Rock. This is Father Voskin. I'm an Armenian priest, and I connect the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, psychological, physical, everything else in between. This is episode number 446 of The Next Step.
This is Susie from In His Shoes. You're listening to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, newbies discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
It is Christmas time, Christmas in the air, Christmas all around us. How are you feeling? What about that? I'll tell you what I'm feeling. I am congested. My head is stuffy, and I think you can hear it in my voice. But we're going to get through this next hour together because, hey, this is what we do. Not only at Christmas, but every week. This is the next step for the Christmas week and ushering in the winter solstice. We've got so much for you today. I'm going to share with you some stories about not only the winter solstice, but about, well, about Jesus being born. Yeah, stories. What if I were to tell you that those stories about Jesus being born in a manger, about the stars in the sky flashing, about the wise men coming, what if I told you that those are secondary stories, not essential to salvation, huh? Think about it. It's a question that you would think about, right? I'm going to get into that. That's going to come up. It's part of the Christmas message that I have for you, because I've been struggling with a lot of stuff, not only my health issues, not only this congestion that you're probably hearing. And if I have to clear my voice a few times, I will try to hit that mute button so not to offend anybody. But I've been struggling with this whole issue of Jesus being born and the beauty that we have, the pageantry that goes around this celebration of Christmas, and juxtaposing it next to some of the tragedies that are taking place throughout the world. And we're seeing it every day. Do you know what happened yesterday here in California? Yesterday was the final deadline to buy an assault weapon. Yeah. In California, there's a 10-day period to buy, where I guess they do some background check on you, make sure you're normal. Don't get me started on this. Anyway, a 10-day period. So yesterday was the 21st. It would be 10 days and you could buy an assault weapon, assault rifle. Yeah. That's what they're called. Assault rifle. You can buy one until December 31st because January 1st they are going to be outlawed here in California. So people were lining up and they were showing us different statistics too, that ever since this law passed, there has been a decrease in the purchase of handguns because people are buying assault rifles. Interesting, huh? They put a ban on them, and what happened? As soon as the ban went through, people are buying them. So yesterday was the deadline to qualify for that 10-day period of where they examine you and everything. You needed to get in for that deadline, and with that, they will. If you get the authorization, then on December 31st, you can purchase the assault rifle. So isn't that beautiful? On Jesus' birth, we are discussing the purchase of assault rifles. Wild, huh? Well, not only that, not only those assault rifles, but last night I had a very, very special opportunity to share some ideas and to be present for a very special... Yes, that was one of those mute buttons that I hit. Okay. A very special presentation by a gentleman named Maher Maharian. It was at the Abril Bookstore. And here is an Armenian guy. Let me give you his background. He's the grandson of survivor of the Armenian Genocide and a war refugee from the Lebanese Civil War. He was born in Yerevan, Armenia. He served in the United States Army and is a veteran who is an activist for social justice and human rights, pro-environment, anti-war, anti-capitalist, and an advocate for women's rights, indigenous sovereignty, and religious freedom. He has visited occupied Palestine and Cairo in 2013 and done social media work in solidarity with the liberation of Palestine and the Egyptian Revolution. He currently plans on staying at Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota before returning to Yerevan and living there. So Standing Rock, we were at a presentation at Abril, and I had the privilege of introducing and giving the opening remarks at this presentation. Quite a few people had attended, not only Armenians, but also people from the African-American community, because there was the tie-in with Black Lives Matter. Now, well, the reason why I got involved in it, well, this is right. If you listen to what I just read about him, yeah, here you go. There it is. It's in his shoes, right? Something that we came to realize back in 2003, that we had to move beyond our own predicament, and we had to partner and be respectful. Of the tragedies of other people, and not only respectful, but being out there and walking in their shoes. So I was just so excited when I heard about Mohed. I had a chance to meet him actually at Abril Bookstore by chance. Again, by chance, he had walked into the bookstore going and getting Armenian flags, and the owner Arno had asked him, "What are you doing with these flags?" And he said, "I'm going back to Standing Rock." And those of you who know the story, I'm not going to go into details about it, but it's basically another place where the government has stepped in and taken away rights from indigenous people. I will definitely have a link on today's show notes, and you can learn more about it, because, and I apologize, I don't want to get into the details about it, because that's not the scope of what we're going to be doing today. But when I heard about his story, I said, wow, this is a guy that we need to be supportive of. And I'm very pleased to tell you that In His Shoes set up a matching fund last night, and we were able to raise some money so that he could get out to Standing Rock and proclaim the sense of all humanity standing up for against injustice. So he was in Abril Bookstore looking for flags, and the owner heard about it, and he not only gave him the flags, but invited him to do this speech. And like I said, I will put links on today's show notes, so you could not only read about Standing Rock, but also read about this man and his work and his efforts. If you have Facebook, do check out his Facebook blogs. Very, very important. Now, that being said, we had a chance to go out there and share with the people, with the local community, about the need to extend our arms to one another, to reach out and to be supportive of one another. And this is what was interesting, and this is what I want to share with you, because over, yes, did I say that? Yeah, thank you. Yes, I'm going to do the Christmas message, Christmas message a la Father Voskin, of course, something a little bit different. That's going to be in the second portion of today's show, right after the song. But for right now, I wanted to just talk a little bit about this, because if you've been following news items, you find that more and more people are bewildered. How do you deal with such immense tragedy, with disrespect in the world? I mean, the elections that we saw here in this country, in the United States, is not unique. I mean, we saw the Brexit, right, a few months earlier, wanting to get out of the European Union. And we're seeing this populist movement throughout the world. And it is about a basic disrespect for other people. And, of course, there are factors involved in this, things that do come up. Now, here is a guy well qualified. I mean, he's not just out there protesting. He's served. He's paid his dues. He's been in the army. He's gone and he's seen what's been happening. And now he's out there in solidarity with the indigenous population over there in North Dakota. And God willing, I'm looking forward to being out there next month in January. I'm trying my best to figure out a way to go and join him over there, because I think it's at these moments that we need to stand up in solidarity. We need to be unified. And I think that it's one thing to talk about it, but it's another thing to be out there. There was such solidarity when Inish Hughes was standing up with the Darfuri people. If you watch the movie Darfur Now, please check that out. That Darfur Now, it is like such an important movie about understanding what Darfur is all about, what genocide is all about, but also what our response needs to be. And there you see in his shoes collecting the signatures and divesting from the Sudan, getting California, the largest state in the union, economically the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world, divesting its money from the Sudan. Well, guess what? Once you divest, once you take your money out of something, they don't have any money to buy the guns. That's how easy it is. And we need to start leveraging this weight that we do have. So these are exciting times. These are exciting times where we can do things like that. And certainly this young man, Maher Maharian, he was in town to talk about what he's doing out there in North Dakota. And we need to be supportive of these kind of actions, because I'm very excited that finally Armenians are looking beyond themselves. When we started in issues back in 2003, people laughed at us. They mocked us. I'll never forget the first time we raised funds for children in Africa. And people said, well, they're black. What are you doing? Others said, why aren't you sending this to Armenia? Well, I don't know why we're not, but, you know, there's people who are suffering, and it's not a question of they're black or they're white. They're people, right? Do they have a heartbeat? Do they have blood going through their veins? Then let's get with the program over here, you know? These are people. These are God's children, and we have an obligation, a responsibility. Yes, those are words people don't like to use, but we have to use those words. Responsibility. Responsibility out there to help, to extend ourselves to other people. And so I was very, very excited when I heard about this guy. And last night we were over there at Abril and getting support. But here's where I need to share this with you too, because along those lines, there was an interesting article that came out on the internet. It was blogged. I don't know if it appeared in print anywhere, but it was about a conference that took place in Canada. And apparently they brought a couple defrocked priests over, and they talked about the ills of the Armenian church, and pointing fingers at some of the leadership, at some of the corruption that takes place within the church, and so on and so on. And I was reading through it, and they were making recommendations on what needed to be done. And it's interesting because it's really about preserving an institution and not the spirit of that institution. It's not about the Christ-centeredness of that institution. Now, hold that thought for a moment, okay? There's an article that I read in one of the Armenian papers. It's called The Armenian Myth. It's a guy who's talking about all the problems, like back in the old days, you know, back, the old days. You know, we used to be called respected people, Armenians. Now look at us. We're not doing this and that. And therefore, we are forming a new group. And in this group, there's no partisanship, there's no There's no differentiation and all this. Well, they're all beautiful ideas to come up with. But you know what's missing out of it? Again, missing the spirit. And so too, last night when we were talking, this man had gone over to North Dakota and he had participated in a spiritual journey with the Sioux tribe, with the Native Americans, the Indian tribe, the Sioux Nation. He had participated with them. He was talking about sacred ground, so sacred that you cannot spit on that ground. The fire being cleansing and the fire having a mystical presence to itself. I mean, you're talking about spirituality. And this is what's void. A lot of times when people get together, and I hear this all the time, people say, well, let's do good work. Let's do some really good work. Let's get together and put our hands together. But when that spirit is absent, what happens? It's just a good work for the sake of it, which is okay, right? It's okay. But it doesn't have a continuity. The spirit is eternal, means more than just you live forever. You know, this is what people get hung up on. The spirit being eternal means that there's an underlying force that connects us all together. And that underlying spirit, that underlying force is that connection that we need in our lives so that you can go from event to event and keep your sanity, yes, and you can keep your courage and you could keep your strength, and that's what perpetuates the good work that we do. Absent of the spirit, you just got basically mechanics. You can program a bunch of robots to go out there, right, and do the good work. Can't you do that? I could do it right now. Program a robot to go out there and pick food from the garden. You could program a robot to go into a grocery store and select different types of foods. You can program a robot to make different meals and provide those meals to a group of people. You can then put it in an endless loop, right? You can program a go-to statement, an endless loop, where that robot continually does that good work. But what do you got without the spirit there? That robot doesn't have the spirit. And so it's always dependent on the spirit and the goodwill of somebody who's standing behind it and saying, do this, do that. That's somebody in the background. That spirit begins someplace. In other words, we all have to rely on that spirit. And that spirit is what you need. That's what's absent out of all this. I read this statement that these people had made up in Canada, you know, these defrocked priests. The church must do that, church must do that. There's not one mention of Jesus Christ being the center of that church. I read with interest about the Armenian myth and this and that, and the Armenian church is the national church. We need the national church. We need this, blah, 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 blah. There's no mention of Jesus Christ. Well, guess what the Armenian church is? It is the body of Jesus Christ. And without that Jesus Christ in there, well, then you basically got a robot. And what happens to the robots? Well, they work. They do their work, but there's no life in them. And so at the end of the day, they slow down. They rust. They wither away. And they're done. And then you've got this vicious cycle of evil and evil and evil. And then somebody comes along and says, hey, this evil's too much. We got to get to good. Okay, how about applying the spirit? And once you do that, you understand that that spirit is what keeps us going and keeps us connected. This is the God force that we have inside of us. This is why the God force is so important to us. You look at what's going on in the world. They're all politicians. You know it. I know it. Come on. Don't fool yourselves. One politician is no different than the other. Break. There, I'm getting the hang of it. How to break. I should write a manual. How to do a podcast while you're not feeling well, while you're under the weather, right? Okay, so no, all the politicians are the same. That's the nature of politics. They're going to bend. They're going to break the rules. They're going to go against what you thought they would do. In fact, there was an interesting survey this morning. They had surveyed and over 50% of the people who voted for Donald Trump today in this survey had said that they don't mind that he's changing his mind or that he is altering from his campaign promises. Well, yeah, they don't mind because, hey, even if you did mind, what are you going to do? That's just the nature of the beast, right? Okay, so we sit here and we as church people with a faith in Jesus Christ know that there is a spirit, and that eternal spirit is the goodness, is the God energy, it's the God force that's inside you and me. Now, once we activate that, what happens? Well, yeah, we go through those motions, we do those things, but we understand that there is a driving force, and you can't understand that driving force. That's what's so beautiful about it. That's the mysticism of it. That's the miraculous nature of it. What's going to make you get up in the middle of the day or in the middle of winter, put on all kinds of warm clothes and go into North Dakota to stand with a bunch of Indians who are protesting for their rights and to leave your comforts and go stand there? Hey, there isn't any logical reason why you do this. You do this because the Spirit moves you. And see, once you got that, once you understand that that Spirit is what's the driving force inside of you, you take on the challenges and you're not scared of the challenges that are around you. That's what our faith does to us. That's why we begin and we end with faith. That's why all of these other projects that don't have faith are doomed to failure. Honestly. The reason why I bought into and in issues is supporting Maher Maharian out there is because the reservation that he's going to over there, the Sioux tribe, the sacredness, the spirituality is more than the physical. It's not about just getting up and saying, you have done me wrong. It's talking about a connection to the divine, to the eternal, to what belongs in the past and what belongs to today and eventually into the future. There's going to be links on today's show notes. Do check them out. Now, along those same lines, you know that the original date for Christmas was January 6th. They moved it to December 25th to accommodate the need to change the practices of celebrating the winter solstice. Now, the people in Armenia, we are the people of Ar. That's connected to Arev, to the sun. And we didn't have any problem with the solstice. And so we kept our date, this January 6th, giving us a chance to celebrate the winter solstice. Every community celebrates a rebirth. And think about it for a moment. We celebrate it in the spring when we celebrate the newness that spring brings. And of course, Easter is then. But Christmas, the winter solstice, the birth of the sun, S-U-N sun. Yeah, that's the one we talk about on the winter solstice. The sun in the sky. Here in the northern hemisphere, and I'm sorry for you people down in the south, but up here, it's a very big celebration because why? The days start getting longer. And as the days get longer, there's more opportunities for more life. More light, more heat, more warmth, and more life. That's why the original solstice celebrations took place. And so on this occasion, we take this moment to celebrate the winter solstice. Happens to be today, actually yesterday to today, the shortest day of the year, and days start getting longer beginning today. Jethro Tull, an incredible musical group, put together a song back in 1976 called Solstice Bells. And just now, actually 2 days ago, a re-release done with a quartet with Ian Anderson singing. I share it with you right now, Solstice Bells with the quartet. Now is the solstice of the year. Winter is a glad song that you hear. Isn't that beautiful? That is the quartet doing Jethro Tull's Solstice Bells. And it is off of an album that will be released in the coming year. We have a pre-release. Isn't that wild? We had a chance to listen to a pre-release today. Solstice Bells. There will be a link on today's show notes to the song, to all of the incredible, incredible work that comes out of Jethro Tull. I do invite you to go and check it out. Check out the lyrics for Solstice and celebrate it. It is a day of celebration. The new sun, S-U-N, sun, being born today. And that's exciting. The days are getting longer. And I'm not going to be too much longer because my voice and my sinuses are hurting, but I'll be back in a few moments.
Oh, come, oh, ye faithful, joyful and triumphant, oh, come, ye.
What if I were to tell you that the birth stories of Jesus were not necessary for salvation? What would you say? I would imagine that some of you might think about it for a while and might say, yeah, that makes sense. But I would imagine that a vast majority of people would say, what? What is this all about? What is this man talking about? The birth stories, they're very important. I want you to think about something for a moment. What was important about Jesus' birth that anybody would have recorded it? Seriously. Come on. Get out of your religious vestments and garments and ask the simple question, what was so special about Jesus' birth that anybody would have recorded it? A star in the sky? Major star in the sky, flashing. Three men coming out of the east. Come on, folks. Actually, what was special about Jesus' birth is recorded elsewhere. Yeah, it's recorded elsewhere. I'm going to share that with you in a few moments. Yeah, you know me. I'm gonna tease you for a moment, right? But the stories that we have come to us from the Gospel of Matthew and from the Gospel of Luke. Gospel of Matthew goes through this genealogy, where it's more specifically, if you look at the genealogy that's presented in Matthew at the beginning, it aligns Jesus with Joseph, doesn't it, right? Interesting, yeah. Joseph, who was betrothed to Mary. And there's the story of the angel visiting and Joseph. And there's the story of Elizabeth and Zechariah, the parents of John the Baptist in the Gospel of Luke. We read the narrative of Jesus' birth with the with the shepherds in the sky and the magi. And we read about, between these two gospels, we read all these famous Christmas imagery that comes to us. You know, there's no room at the inn. In fact, if you look at the statement that's written in the gospel, it's just a one-liner. That's all it is. It says, and Jesus was born in a manger because there was no room at the inn. That's it. Now, we have extrapolated, we have amplified this and made it, you know, available for Hollywood consumption, right? We made this beautiful pageantry about it. We showed Joseph and Mary walking through the streets of Bethlehem, knocking on the doors. Please, please, my wife is in labor. Let her come. And they, people say, no, there is no room for her. Go outside, get out. And finally, somebody comes up and says, come right this way. I have a nice place for you. And they take Mary and Joseph to the barn. And there among the animals, there Jesus is born. Well, you know, it's a beautiful story and it could have happened that way. But why? Why would anybody have recorded it? Well, the only reason they would have recorded it is what? Because Jesus was an exceptional person. You see, everybody from the beginning of time has been born. Did you expect something more profound than that, huh? Everybody from the beginning of time has been born. Everybody, anybody you find in history has been born. The unique part about Jesus is not that he was born, but that he resurrected. Now, nobody's done that one. Everybody has come into this world, and everybody has checked out of this world except Jesus. Okay? They put him on a cross. They nailed him. They killed him. They crucified him. They tortured him. And then he comes back to life. In other words, that torture, that crucifixion, the breaking of the bones, everything is to say, look, there's the finality. Don't get it out of your mind that this was an illusion. No, it's done. And then Jesus comes back to life. Now, because he came back to life, that was the first gospel. In other words, good news. That Jesus overcame death. And in fact, that good news was so intense and so great that people went on to die for that. And I've shared this with you many times. It's probably the biggest proof that we have about the resurrection. Because, hey, you know, somebody puts a gun up to your head, puts a knife up to your throat, and says, deny what you're saying. And these people had that chance. Okay? Jesus has risen from the dead. People were given that chance. Deny it or else you will die. Now, you know, there's certain things that you will deny. You know, if somebody puts a gun up to your head and says, you know, deny that that you need to put 87 octane in your car and you have to put 92 octane in it, you know, I'm not going to lose my life for that. Okay, I'll put 92 in there. Yeah, that's it. It's ridiculous. Of course it is. But Jesus' resurrection is not in that category. It was something that people died for. I mean, they were given the chance. They were given the chance to walk away, but they refused. So much so that the resurrection had influenced their life. They had been struck by it. And you can imagine this. You can imagine that reaction. Everybody in the world has lived, has come into this world through birth. Everyone has died at the end. But one man, after this torturous, this barbarism, after this inhumane way of dying, comes back to life. Now tell me, that wouldn't change you? Of course, and it changed those people who saw that, who witnessed the resurrection. So much so that these people were willing to go out and die. They said, forget it. We will not renounce. We will not betray. We will not change our mind. This is what we saw. And I'm not talking about just the 12. I'm talking about hundreds of people, that early Christian community. And throughout the years, the centuries, it has been thousands of people who on that story of resurrection have been able to stand up and have found martyrdom because, hey, it is so real. The resurrection is so real. Now, because the resurrection was real and intense and life-changing, people started wondering about Jesus. And so they started asking questions. Where was he born? Who were his parents? How did he grow up? And so you find those gospel narratives were written maybe about 20, 30 years after the resurrection, when the church, the early Christian community, commissioned people who were around at that time, one of them being Saint Matthew, one of the apostles, another one, a physician named Saint Luke, who went on and wrote the gospel narratives. Now, whether you call them by that name, you call them by the source names, that's secondary. But what's important is that those stories were written inside of a tradition of resurrection. They were post-resurrection stories. And so, when I tell you, when I shared with you at the very beginning, I said, if I told you that the birth stories of Jesus were not necessary to Christian salvation, what would you say? I'm wondering what you do say to that. Now, even if they were fabricated stories, No. Just relax. Take a breath now. Come on, let's all take a breath together. Oh, wow, I'm doing that okay, huh? Even with this cold. Take a breath and relax. I'm not saying they were fabricated. I'm saying even if they were fabricated, okay? They have nothing to do with the salvific message of Christ. Whether Mary and Joseph were riding on a donkey or on a horse, whether they went from Bethlehem into Judea, whether they went to Egypt, whether they went from the temple back home in a caravan by themselves, whether there was an inn or whether it was a manger or whether it was a hospital is secondary. It's not necessary to the salvation process. You are saved by the blood of Christ, we say. You are saved by the actions taken at Calvary, Golgotha, and it's the resurrection that sets Jesus apart from everybody else. And this is why Jesus is central to our faith, because he resurrected, and this is why resurrection is central to the Jesus message. Without resurrection, everybody's been born, and you've got nice stories about everybody. Yeah, I could tell you some cool stories too about birth stories. I've got a few of them myself. Oh man, do I have a few. But the specialness, the uniqueness of Jesus was that he resurrected. And so I'm going to say it again. Even if the stories were fabricated, and I'm not saying that they were, but the stories of the shepherds in the fields, about the away in a manger, no crib for his bed, about the stars in the sky, even if all of those were fabricated, and I'm not saying they were, but even if they were, they do not give you the salvation unless you tie Jesus Christ with the cross and ultimately resurrection. And so that being said, what is my Christmas message? What is I shared with you? I said the true story of Jesus, of Jesus' birth, is not contained in those narratives in Matthew and Luke. I said you find it elsewhere. Well, where do you find it? Well, aren't you glad you asked? And aren't you glad you're tuned in to the next step to find out where they are? Well, of course, it's in Holy Scripture. And it is in the Gospel of John. Let me share with you the Christmas message from the Gospel of St. John. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. What is he talking about over here? Not about mangers, not about stars, not about Joseph and Mary, not about three wise men. He's talking about the essence of all life. In the beginning was the Word. What was in the beginning? Well, according to the Jewish tradition, right, what's the first thing that God creates? Let there be light. Let there be light. According to scientific tradition, what is there at the beginning? Light. Nothing can transcend the speed of light, we are told, right? And what is there at the very beginning, at the Big Bang? It's this incredible explosion within nanoseconds, the foundation of the universe coming together, right? And what's at the very beginning? Light. And what does John, in his primitive, non-scientific way, tell us, right? He says, in him was life, and the life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There it is. That's how simple it is. That's what Christmas is. To usher in the newness of light, of life, of Jesus Christ being born. And so when I look at the world and I see the difficulties, the tragedies that are taking place, and I think about the pageantry that we put together and all the different things that we muster up to say Merry Christmas to one another and spend incredible amounts of money. What was it this morning? $13 billion that Amazon is going to be bringing in just in the next couple days before Christmas. I can't remember if that was the amount or it was just some absurd amount, right, to bring in Christmas. Where will you have Christmas? Right here, right? Look how easy it is. We complicate it. Look how easy it is. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John continues to say the true life that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to be called children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. Are you connecting dots? Are you connecting dots with me already? What are we talking the first portion of today's show? You can't have these experiences without the Spirit. Not born of the will. Of a husband's will, of a human decision, not by natural descent, not by people getting together and saying, oh, let's do some good work. No, you need that God force in there. Born of God. There it is. It's in Scripture. You see how it all comes together? I wish you could see the smile on my face, because sometimes we even just surprise ourselves when we put this together. It all connects. It all connects. It's all one inclusive story of human life, of divine life, of divine energy, of us touching one another with that divine energy. And then we get to verse 14. It says, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The Word became flesh. What did we hear? The Word became flesh. What is Christmas? The Word became flesh. That which was at the beginning of all time. Not a husband's will, not of human wanting, but from the beginning of all time. Yes, that nanosecond before the Big Bang. Right there. Singularity, right? At that singular moment, that Word became flesh and lived among us. Wow. Can you imagine? You know how awe-inspiring that is? You know how incredible that is? It's that moment that you realize that that God force is in your midst. And now the church, his sacred body, has to live up to that. This is where we fail. We forget about that God force that's inside of us. We need to realize that that God force has been there from the beginning of time, and it is inside each and every one of us. And Christmas, for it to be Christmas, means that you have to live out that God force. You have to put that spirit back into your life and make sure that spirit is the one driving you and guiding you through the different challenges that you have of the day, the different decisions that you make during the day. When you talk about Merry Christmas, you're talking about the Word becoming flesh. You're talking about a newness, a moment of singularity, a moment that took place, and that singularity is now filtered and it takes place. Every single moment in your life, it only requires that you give it a chance. Give it a chance to give that moment through your life, through your expressions, through your work. A few moments ago, I played for you a new song, a newly about to be released song, yes, off of the string quartet version of Jethro Tull's songs. This one is an adaptation of a song called Christmas Song. It is called Pass Us the Bottle. Take a listen to it. Beautiful music and even more precious words. A Christmas message through a song.
Pass us that bottle, will you?
He
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that nice reminder. And thank you, all of you, for listening, for your prayers, for your support. I take this chance and opportunity to wish you a very Merry Christmas. It's not about December 25th, January 6th. It's about living Jesus, being born every single day of our lives. Being born through our work, through our actions, through the love that we have toward one another. Keep it alive. Make Christmas a celebration for every day. We are going to have some interesting things this weekend. This Saturday evening, I'm going to be at the St. Peter Armenian Church in Glendale, where we're going to be doing a Christmas Eve program, a very special one. For me, it's very special. We had our Christmas caroling night, and those are nice. We have so many opportunities for you to get involved. I look forward to your participation. Do check out our website, inissues.org. Press on the donate button. It's a tangible way of making your voice heard and letting us know that you're with us, that this ministry is being shared by you. On behalf of the wonderful people who put today's show together, I want to wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas. On behalf of our producer, Susie, who does an incredible job every week, Ken, our engineer, who somehow puts it all together, don't know how he does that, and on behalf of me, Father Vazgen, Merry Christmas, everyone. I look forward to being with you again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
This is the reason of the season.